Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, everybody. It's time for our annual audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It helps us understand our audience better, know what you like and don't like, how you listen to the show. It also helps us tell advertisers what kind of people listen. But I promise you, your feedback is always kept personally anonymous. All you have to do is visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It'll just take a few minutes, and it'll help us make Twit even better. We really appreciate your support and any help you can give us. twit.tv/survey. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, March 6th, 2016. This is episode 1268. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Right now, get free expedited FedEx shipping when you go to ring.com/techguy. And by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of SuperTank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more. And by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a landing page or beautiful website for your portfolio, blog, business, or online store. Enter the offer code TECHGUY and get 10% off. Squarespace, you should. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography. Digital photography. It is delicious, but it's digital, not digital. smartphones, smartwatches, 8888 Ask Leo, virtual reality, visors, all of that, 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can call via Skype. Won't cost you anything because it's toll free. 1-888-827-5536. And I would love to hear from you. Yesterday, I gave my review of the new Samsung Galaxy S7, which I have in my hot little hands. How do you like that, Kim? Now, see, I perhaps maybe went a little bit all out. I got the gold. It looks like a brick of gold, doesn't
it? It's beautiful.
It's gorgeous.
But now I have a iPhone.
I know. You should never try to follow me.
Well, I don't.
Yeah, because I have a new phone every 3 weeks, and this is the new one. But I have to say I love this. I love it, and the battery life has been good, and the camera is spectacular. The screen is gorgeous. So this is Samsung's been really struggling. It's odd, I guess, because they're competing head-to-head against the iPhone, and the iPhone is kind of an easy choice for a lot of people, as it should be. Kind of a no-brainer. Apple's made a lot of hay, of course, about how they're fighting for your privacy and security online. And certainly that's true. Although I think it's probably I would say absolutely no less true of most Android phones. In fact, all the Google phones, all the Nexus phones have been encrypted for the last few years since the Nexus 6. And as strong, if not stronger, encryption than the iPhone. The iPhone has one little kind of glaring privacy flaw. That's iCloud. Do you use the iCloud backup? Apple certainly encourages you to do. I know they bug me every 3 weeks. They say, you haven't backed up in 3 weeks. What's wrong with you? The problem with the iCloud backup, if privacy is your chief concern, is that the keys to that backup are held by Apple, not by you. And so a rogue Apple employee, a law enforcement order, a hacker, as we know, could breach that boundary and get your stuff. So don't, if you really want privacy and you really don't want anybody. See, I think, though, when I say that, I think people go, well, I don't really care if law enforcement, you know, if gets it, because I trust the courts and the subpoena process and the warrant process. I'm not really too worried about that. And I have a good password. Apple has fixed, we think, the flaws that let hackers get into those movie stars' account, iCloud's accounts and steal their photos. We think, we hope. But that's always a possibility. You know what the real rule is don't put stuff on your phone that you don't want anybody else to see. I think that's really there's really no guarantee of privacy. Period. If you're putting it on a phone, you're kind of, admittedly, we want to keep it as secure as possible. Interesting article came out yesterday. I think it was in Wired magazine. Pointing out that, actually it was Bloomberg Business Week. I'm sorry, Bloomberg Business Week. Who needs Apple, the headline reads, when the FBI could hack the terrorist iPhone itself? Selena Wang wrote the story, but she quotes many, many very respected Apple security gurus like Jonathan Zdarsky, who say, you know, there's lots of ways the FBI could get into this. Really, what this FBI versus the Apple lawsuit is to establish a precedent. The FBI would like to make it just routine, as it used to be, incidentally, that they just go to Apple and say, what's in there? It continues to be routine that they go to Apple if there's an iCloud backup, incidentally. you should be aware of that. I feel like life's too short to worry about that stuff. I think privacy is an important thing. I agree. Maybe it's because I live in public a little bit, right? That I've kind of given up on that notion. So my job, I guess, is to tell you where you can and cannot secure your data and to warn you that they're, you know, putting it on a phone is probably not the, you know, you're taking naked pictures of yourself and you're putting them on your phone. There's always that risk. If you're not a movie star, you're probably, you know, nobody's trying to hack your iCloud account, but there's always that risk. I just want to bring that up. Just mention that. And Android, you know, it's not known. I don't think, Samsung would particularly stand up and say no, but they do build security into these phones. They do build encryption in, and you can put a long password on it, which is pretty effective. So I think we're in a similar situation all around. Let's see what else. What else is going on? I like this S7. I guess that was the bottom line. My thumbnail review, I did a long review yesterday. You can find that at our website, techguylabs.com. My thumbnail review is, it's a definite buy. This is a nice phone. If you're going to look at it, if you're willing to spend that much money for an Android phone, we're talking Apple money here. We're talking $600, $700. This is a great phone. Very happy with it. And it stands up well, I think, next to the iPhone. The funny thing is the screen on the iPhone is the same size as the screen on the Android phone, because the iPhone has bezels. The phone feels so much bigger, but it's really the same size screen. It's interesting how you can do that. As for watches, well, we're going to find out. And I think, what is it? The 21st now is the day, 2 weeks from tomorrow. Apple's going to make an announcement. No invitations have gone out. They won't go out till a week ahead of time. Apple likes to make journalists pay the highest possible airplane ticket fees. Maximize your airfare. Minimize your preparation. At least, you know, you don't have to worry about packing. You just get on a plane and go. But the rumor mill is strong that it will be the Monday, the 21st of March, that Apple will have another event. We don't know where. We don't have any clues, except that it's widely believed they'll announce a new small phone, the iPhone SE. 4-inch phone for people who want smaller phones, and there's a market for that. It's interesting how we've moved to bigger and bigger phones. People used to mock me because I had a Galaxy Note 3 or Note 2, and it was, wow, 5.2 inches. Oh, that's huge. What are you holding? is that a 2x4 you're holding to your head? No, it's a phone. Now it's just commonplace. Although I admit, what was I watching? I was watching House of Cards. That show is back on Netflix, the Kevin Spacey. Wow, full of political intrigue, that show. It's almost, wow, it's almost as full of backstabbing and intrigue as the actual political scene today. But I saw somebody with a giant phone. I thought, wow, I don't know what that is. But she certainly, is that a tablet she's holding? She certainly found a bigger phone than the current crop of very big phones. But Apple thinks, and they're probably right, people still yearn. Do you yearn for the day when you could hold a phone in your little hand and put it in your little pocket and not worry about how big it is? Well, if there's a market, Apple has found it, and we'll make that phone. They'll also announce not a new watch. We thought maybe a new Apple Watch. No, new watch bands. Woohoo! and they're due for a new iPad. They normally announce a new iPad in the fall, and they didn't this last year. So we expect a new iPad. Rumor is, again, this is all rumor. Apple doesn't say, but the rumor is this will be a iPad Air size 10-inch screen Pro. So we thought the iPad Pro was all about the giant screen. Well, no, apparently it's not. It's about the pencil. And there will be an iPad, 10-inch iPad Pro. What do you call it? iPad Pro Mini? I don't know what you call it. But I think that would be good. iPad Pro is awfully big, but it would be nice to have a standard size iPad that had the pencil, had the four speakers, and, rumor has it, a very good camera. Mm. Hey, people are taking pictures with their iPads. Might as well put a good camera in it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, your phone calls next. We're halfway through House of Cards in 2 days. Came out on Friday. And we're on episode 6. We just watched episode 6, so we're halfway through. Some shockers. I think it's better than last year. Last year I was disappointed with a little bit, but this is a little bit better than last year. Yeah, the Q1 kind of showed up in there, didn't it, Richard? the Q. I like that. Man, I love that camera. I'm not going to talk about that camera. It's too expensive. But man, I love that camera. Go ahead, you can look.
It looks like a camera.
Yeah, it does. It's just like a camera. Oh, it's a little different.
Two phones.
It's got a square.
It kind of looks like an old.
It does, camera. Doesn't it? It looks very old fashioned. Yeah.
Especially with that leather strap.
Yeah, I love that strap. It's didn't come with a camera. I bought it. It's very. It is kind of old fashioned because it's all knobs. You know, you twiddle the. That's the shutter speed. That's the aperture. It's all knobby.
It's not as digital. It's not as automatic.
No. Well, it is, but it's a very simple, straightforward camera. But man, the pictures are amazing. Amazing pictures. We can't change the lenses or anything. It's just the way it is. What it is. Here, I'll take a picture of my dog. With the macro.
Your dog here?
My brass dog.
Oh.
My little brass dog. Little brass doggy.
Does it like automatically upload to something? Or do you
You can. I can pair it to my phone. In fact, I'll show you that. I'll show you that trick in a second. Let me compose this beautiful dog picture. All right. So then what you do is I've assigned this button to be the... See, there's the QR code. And you launch the Leica Q app. And you connect by QR code. Put the QR code in there. And then it's going to connect... In a second. And then there's your pictures. And there's the little doggy picture. So I'll copy. Oh, yeah. I didn't get that one over here. So we're going to select these three. Boom, boom, boom. Hey, I'm talking to you. And then I'll download those to the camera. Da-gong, chink. Da-gong, chink. I'm shooting DNG RAW plus JPEG. There is no plain DNG. It's interesting. All right, downloading done. We're walking on rain shine here in Northern California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK. Leo Kim Schaffer is here answering the phones. If you call, you will speak to her, and she'll prepare you for your appearance on national radio. Hello, Kim.
Good morning.
We're both wearing purple.
Must be that whole week of Prince that's been going on in the Bay Area.
I know Prince is the purple, his purple highness.
Yes.
Has been all over the Bay Area.
And secret shows and everything.
Yeah. Secret shows? Did you go?
No.
Yeah, it was 2 in the morning or something,
yeah,
right? At Great American Music Hall in San Francisco.
He's late as it is when he's on time.
Yeah,
so.
I would have liked to have seen him.
It would have been cool.
It's just a man and his piano.
A man and his piano. Especially the shows at the Paramount, small venue.
Would have been fun.
Yeah.
He was, he's brave because he did it on Academy Award night. And
totally sold out within 30
seconds.
And
sold out instantly. I couldn't get tickets. I tried. Yeah. I know. Lisa said, we can watch the Academy Awards anytime.
Yeah. Co-workers were trying to get
tickets. I couldn't get tickets.
They could not get it.
No.
Oh, well.
I said, don't you know who I am? They said, no, we don't, and you can't get tickets.
No, we don't, and it doesn't matter.
And it doesn't matter, even if we didn't know who you were. Who should I start with here today? Looks like some good calls.
Yeah, we've got Mark and Tustin, and you're going to help him spend some money on a few cameras.
Okay. Cameras, I'm good at spending money on.
Cameras.
I'm very good. I'm way too good at that. Hello, Mark. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, question. My daughter's taking video production. She did it in junior high. Now she's doing it in high school. And she wants a better camera for doing stuff personally, and I'm not against it because I'm going to set up a computer training website, so she's going to be the camera person for stuff I'm doing live as opposed to on the computer.
Nice.
So it's not just a kid budgeted camera. It can be more expensive.
Yeah. I take it she's studying video production.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but I have to say nowadays I don't really recommend camcorders so much because every camera you buy today can shoot brilliant video. The only drawback to using a still camera for video is that, for, believe it or not, tax reasons, they limit it to 30 minutes at a time. But truth is, I don't think you want to shoot more than 30 minutes at one shot. She's learning that, I'm sure, that you want to chop it up.
Right.
So I don't think that's so much a problem. So I think what you could reasonably look at is a still camera that shoots video as well. One of the reasons that's a good idea is because the still cameras, many of them, if you get a higher-end camera, have interchangeable lenses. And for videography, that's better than having a camcorder with a fixed lens because you can do all sorts of different looks and styles. It could be very filmic. She could be the next Francis Ford Coppola. You know?
Yep. So, no, she's good. I have her do stuff for me before.
What's your budget?
Haven't even thought of it, but I guess we could at least go up to 500, maybe more. Really, it depends on... if you can make a good case, I can get more money.
Who holds the keys?
Well, it's my, she'll be using it, but it's
you're
also
use
a
it
business
too.
Thing.
And are you going to use it for video only or for stills as well?
Nah, really for the videos.
Okay.
I hardly take pictures. My kids hate taking pictures.
I know, me too. My kids just... they'd throw their hands up in disgust, and I think I did something to traumatize them at a young age, and they just can't take it anymore.
My daughter's a savant. I've been on one-way glass and tried to take a picture of her.
She knows instantly.
As I was about to pull the trigger, she turned.
Yeah.
Turned her back to me.
She knows. Dad's looking. Dad's looking. $500 should be enough to get a very nice point-and-shoot. If you want interchangeable lenses, and I think you might... I hate to go too high on you because there are cameras that would make amazing video cameras. The new
it can't hurt because I'm probably not the only one asking questions. So give me a few suggestions.
So I would take a look at a Micro Four Thirds camera. These are mirrorless still cameras that shoot dynamic video and have a wide range of lenses you can choose from. So you could shoot, you want to do a skateboard video, you could shoot fisheye. You want to do a beautiful moving story of a man and a woman in Bruges, you could use a wider angles fast lens. It'll give you great depth of field. You have choices, in other words.
Okay.
Panasonic makes really excellent Micro Four Thirds cameras, which also do a very, very good job for video. In fact, many of the video shooters that I know are now shooting with still cameras, like the Canon 5D. The new Mark IV is due out any day now. I'm trying to think though, for $500, where we're gonna sit here. I would say Micro Four Thirds, the Panasonic brand name is very good. You can get an older Panasonic for $500, like the Lumix GX1. That's been discontinued. But they're doing – I'm just looking at prices right now just to see. There's a great website called DP for digital photography, dpreview.com, that reviews all of these. And I absolutely would trust them and their reviews. The for $275, which is quite reasonable, the Lumix GF3. That has interchangeable lenses too. So because these are mirrorless still cameras, they're smaller, they're lighter, they're simpler. They do incredible video. HD and in many cases 4K video now. They do slow-mo, they do high speed, they do a lot of different effects. So I think there's a lot of good choices in that range. I'm looking at the chat room. Somebody's mentioning the Canon G7, which is a point-and-shoot, but an awfully good point-and-shoot. That's a really good choice as well. That's about $600. That's more compact. And so there are other things to consider. If you want compact, I think that's a great choice. Sony's got some really amazing Micro Four Thirds, even full frames. The Sony Alpha series is quite good. Somebody's reminding me that the new Alpha 6300 from Sony is coming out. That's more like $1,000, but that's going to be an amazing camera with interchangeable lenses. That's a larger sensor, too. Sensor size is kind of important. You don't need to go all the way to full frame for video, but APS-C will give you some really nice looking video as well. I'm not sure. Oh, the Panasonic G7. Somebody's saying not the Canon G7. Let me look at that. I'm not sure exactly what other things for you to look at, but I would say, oh yeah, there you go. Now this is not a bad choice. The G7 with the kit lens, with the basic lens, is about $600. That's going to do 4K for you.
Okay.
And it's going to, which is really nice, and it's going to allow you to change lenses as you generate more budget down the road. You can get more lenses. I think the G7, the Panasonic Lumix G7 is probably, I think we've narrowed it down. You see, it's hard for me to choose. That's why I buy so many cameras. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The RX 100 Mark IV, fantastic camera. So there's two reasons that still cameras don't shoot longer than 30 minutes, sometimes less than that even. If you see 30 minutes, that's for tax reasons, because they're taxed then in Europe as video cameras, not as still cameras, and the taxes are much higher. The other reason, of course, is chips overheating, although they've gotten really good at handling that, so that's less of a problem now. Yeah, I think the Lumix is very nice. We have a special guest coming up in our camera segment at 12:30. Yeah, the RX 100 Mark IV is amazing. Atort Aloha is in the chat room. He's going to be our guest. Anthony, is it Tortiello, Anthony? He's going to be filling in for Chris Markart for the next few weeks. And he is an amazing photographer. One of his images was used in the Shot on iPhone 6 campaign that Apple did. It was amazing. It was the only one underwater. It was a picture of a turtle. See, he's in Hawaii, so that's going to be fun. Our show today brought to you by my doorbell, my Ring Video doorbell. I don't know if you've heard the show today, Here to Go Off. It rings on my watch. It rings on my phone. It rings everywhere. And I love that. Now, here's why you want the Ring Video doorbell. This is an internet-connected doorbell. Very easy. Replaces your existing doorbell, wired or not. If it's wired, it'll use the wires from your existing doorbell. So the Ring doorbell will ring your chimes in your house. You just take off your old doorbell. It's just two screws. Trim the wires off the door jamb onto the back plate here. Put it on the terminals. Really easy to do. You don't have to have wiring because this has a big lithium ion battery in it. Good enough, good for a year of operation. So, and they even come, it even comes with a USB charging cable so you can charge it up. In fact, I like this Ring Box because it comes with everything you need. If you don't need a drill bit unless you're putting it somewhere where there's no doorbell, but it comes with that. It comes with a special screwdriver bit and the Torx bit that you need for attaching the doorbell. That's so people can't easily remove it. They've got a little level in here, so you're going to do a nice job of the install. It looks great, but here's what's cool. It attaches to your Wi-Fi. You've got a camera, nice high-definition, wide-angle camera. It's going to see everything that happens outside your door. It's got motion sensors, too, so bad guy doesn't have to even ring the doorbell. If it comes up on your stoop, you're going to see him. It's also got a speaker and a microphone. So when somebody rings the doorbell, you can go, yeah, hey, what's happening? Leave the package right there. I love the motion detection. In fact, I'll show you. I will pull my Ring app up here, and we'll just see what's going on at the house. I use it on Android, but it has an iOS app as well. And what's nice is you can say, oh, I missed a ring. I thought I missed a ring. Today at 1, somebody rang the doorbell. So you can see who it is. There's somebody there. Oh, that's Grandpa. No problem. Poppy came by. But see, you got the video of him. You know he was there. And if I were there when the doorbell rang, I could press the button. I could talk to him. Hey, we're not here right now. Come back in an hour. We'll be home in a bit. This is so awesome. The motion detection is awesome, too, because you can set how sensitive it is. So you can turn on ring alerts. You can also turn on motion alerts. You can see what the recent activity was. I won't watch a tutorial. I've done this before. You could set up the range. I've set it up to be less sensitive because I don't want cars driving by on the street. But if you want it to be more sensitive, you can increase the range. This is awesome. And then you, no matter where you are, anywhere in the world, your doorbell rings. You're going to hear from them, and you can talk to them. The Ring Video Doorbell, $200. We're going to get you expedited FedEx shipping for free. All you have to do is go to ring.com/tech guy. ring.com/tech guy. Easy to install. I am no handyman. I did it myself, and I couldn't be happier. In fact, it would be a great gift for your mom, your dad, your family members. Ring. Everybody in the studio has one. That's the only negative. When one person's phone goes off, everybody goes, was that mine? No, it was me. ring.com/tech guy. You're going to love it. Oh, definitely the S7 Edge. Unless you're really stuck on a pure Google experience, this is an amazing, gorgeous phone. And I don't find the TouchWiz really gets in the way. Camera's so much better. It has OIS, which the actually let me take the same picture. Okay, I'll tell you what. So I did the doggy picture. I'll take the same picture with this camera. And we'll do a comparison. What do you say? Yeah. Yeah. Actually, you might think that the camera phone looks better. All right. Here's one. Which one do you like best? There's one. There's two. There's one. Surely
I feel like I'm at the eye doctor.
Yeah, you shouldn't judge it because this is brighter. Two. This one's brighter.
Yeah.
And this one, the focus is off. I focused on the shoulder instead of the nose. The depth of field's much higher on this.
See,
second.
I would go with that one.
Yeah,
personally.
Of course. So would everybody. And that's the camera phone. That's the camera phone. Isn't that beautiful?
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, this camera on this phone is unbelievable. The colors are a little bit brighter. These are probably more accurate. This is with the.
I don't know. It looks pretty bright to me from here. Yeah. The little doggy.
There's more depth of field as well on this one. It's a little subtler, but this. Wow. Look at that. That's with a camera phone. Look at the depth of field in that. It's amazing. We had to go through a lot of different camera models, didn't we, to figure out which one is the right one. Mark and his 15-year-old daughter, who is a budding prodigy of film. I really think that, you know, there are some advantages to a camcorder form factor. It looks more like a video camera. But even movies and TV shows now are starting to use these incredibly high-quality still cameras. There are some issues with the sensors on still cameras. There's something called the jelly roll or the jelly issue, where there's a lot of movement. The CMOS sensors in these cameras and the way the shutters work, sometimes you get a kind of a rolling feeling with movement on them. But a lot of the newer cameras, that's not so much of a problem now. And of course, you're just careful how you shoot. You don't see it so much. I have to say, I feel like nowadays buying a camcorder is just, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Get a good still camera and you'll get great video plus stills. And it's really nice, by the way, to have stills and video mixed together in your kind of digital photo album. For a still photographer, having that video is also great. And most of these cameras now, they just have a button on the camera that you press and it's immediately taking video. It's nice to have both. Carolyn in Pasadena, California. Hi, Carolyn. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Why, hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
Well, it was very strange. I've been trying to get my brother to give up his XP machine, so I bought him a laptop for Christmas, yada-da. But that's not why I'm calling.
But it was nice of you. you get credit for that.
I was trying to make it more familiar to him, so I was trying to download a copy of Firefox. So I went to Bing and found Firefox, and I went to their site. I'm pretty sure it was their site,
Was it Mozilla.org?
Yeah.
Okay.
And something got in there, and I ended up having this horrible attack where I got 174 potentially viral things that I had to have.
Who gave you that number? What program told you that?
Malwarebytes.
Yeah. So one of the things you should be aware of is that a lot of programs identify things like cookies, things that are the normal, in you get in the normal course of events, they're not malware, but identify them as malware. Tracking cookies. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, no, this
when
is
I hear 174,
dot,
when I hear
Yantu.
Oh, Yantu's not good.
No.
When I hear 174, though, I think that most of those are tracking cookies and things like that.
They were all replications. I mean, because it just went zip and the whole thing was full.
Yeah. Well,
but my question to you is, you know, I've already been through the Malwarebytes thing and so forth, and I'm still getting little pop-ups from them saying, you know, we stopped this and we stopped that. And so I'm to the point where I don't know if I still want to pursue the cleaning or if it would just be better to wipe it and reinstall a fresh, clean version.
Yeah, well, I think now's a good time to do it. He hasn't done probably very much with it, right?
No, that's just it. There's nothing on here.
It's very hard. Okay, one of the reasons, Malwarebytes is fine. I hope it's the real Malwarebytes. This is another issue, by the way. You kind of sussed to this. Maybe I didn't get it from the Firefox site. I got a phony Firefox. But you might have got a phony Malwarebytes, too. In fact, that's more common.
Great.
MalwarebyTes.org, okay? And don't get it from anywhere else.
Yes.
Because, of course, if you're a malware author, what's the best thing for you to do? Pose as a malware removal tool. Oh, hey, that's great. And it's easy enough because people do what you did, which is they Google Malwarebytes, and then they pick one of the, you know, the first thing that pops up, which may not be the official site. So if you're going to use Malwarebytes, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it, make sure you spell it Malwarebytes .org, okay?
Yeah.
And even you can't even say, oh, well, I looked at the website and it's correct, because there's nothing on that website that can't be exactly copied.
I know. Isn't that awful?
Yeah, it's very easy to do. So once you've got something on your system, certainly the real Mozilla does not do installed Yantu or anything else. Yantu is a it's not exactly malware. I think I call it malware. It's adware. It pops up ad links.
Yeah, it kept on switching over to Yahoo search.
Yeah, like it wants you to, yeah, because they make money from Yahoo, right? So it's a money-making scheme. It's malware because, in my opinion, you didn't want it.
That's right.
And it's doing things you don't want it to do.
That's right.
That qualifies as malware to me.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's technically, it's removable. It's not. So the problem is if it's just, you know, kind of adware, you might be able to uninstall it properly and get your machine safe and back to normal. If any malware is on your system at all, I mean, true malware, mm-hmm. it hides. It's hard to get rid of, and it often installs other things. The fact that you say there's 174 infections worries me a little bit. That sounds like maybe more than just Yantu's on there.
Yeah, well, there was something else called trojan.dns.changer.dnsr.
Oh, that's nasty. Okay. Yeah, wipe it. Because you can, yeah, wipe it. Because you can use Malwarebytes, which is a fine tool, but it doesn't. There's no guarantee that you've removed everything. It will remove what it can remove, but that's not everything.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess I'll go to techguylabs.com and see how to do that again.
Yeah, you bought it with Windows 8 on it or Windows 10?
10.
Yeah. So it's a very easy process. Probably the simplest thing to do would be to go to Microsoft and make sure it's Microsoft and download the Windows 10 installer. They have a what they call an ISO that is basically an installer file, an image file that you put on a USB key. It's good to have this anyway. You could also actually because you it's a new computer. You don't even need to do that. What am I saying? Just hit the Windows key and type recovery. And you'll see all your recovery options, and one of them is a clean install, and just do that.
Oh, yeah.
It's already all, I forgot, it's already all on there. You bought it as a Windows 10 machine. It's already all on there.
Right.
So easy. It's easy peasy.
Okay.
It'll be fast, too,
so
you know.
Recovery and then the...
Yeah. I do it, you know, if the machine's acting flaky, I do it all the time. And it'll wipe your data, so make sure anything that he created on there that you've saved.
Mm-hmm.
But if he hasn't done anything, then just... Give him a fresh machine. That's always the easiest. And it's so fast now with Windows 10 that I would just
that's
do that.
The better.
Then you're guaranteed, okay, this is clean.
Yeah. Okie doke.
Okay? I won't raise the subtle issue that if it's really malicious stuff, really bad malware, it could go into the install partition, modify that too. So, you know, 100% certainty you would want to install from a known good source, like download it from Microsoft. Burn it onto a DVD where it can't be modified and installed from that. But this isn't that case. I really don't think so. Just do a recovery. It has a recovery partition on it. It'll be a quick install, and you'll be back. And everybody will be happy, and that's the best thing to do. Now, Firefox, incidentally, does use Yahoo as its search. You can change its default search, but the default search is Yahoo on Firefox. I would get Chrome. I'm actually strong preference for Google Chrome as my browser. Which you can get free from google.com/Chrome. And that will not install Yantu or anything else. I don't think Firefox will either. But, you know, Google makes money doing other things. They don't need to do that. 8888-ASK, Leo. That's a great topic. And I appreciate your call. And I think you're a good sister to buy that for your brother. More of your calls coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. About 45 minutes, we're going to do our segment, our photo segment. As you know, our digital photography guru, Chris Marquardt, usually joins us at 1:30 the second hour, but he is on a photo tour for like 3 weeks. But I'm really pleased. We have a replacement filling in for Chris, who is one of our regular viewers, is a professional photographer in Hawaii. Anthony Tortiello, and he'll join us to talk about water photography. One of his pictures, a beautiful picture of a sea turtle, was featured by Apple in their Shot on iPhone 6 campaign. Just a gorgeous image done with a smartphone. So we call him A-Tort in the chat room. A-Tort will be joining us, Anthony Tortiello, a little later on. 8888-ASK, Leo, that's the phone number. Our next caller is Alexander. He's in Georgia. Hi, Alexander.
Hey, Leo, how are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. I didn't expect I'd actually be able to get through and talk to you.
It's a miracle. Hallelujah.
Yeah. Well, so I have a question. I'm kind of give a background. I'm a fairly tech-savvy guy. I've built my own PCs, a couple of them so far. And in this case, I'm not quite sure how to respond because I've been getting a lot of like robocalls, telemarketers, and like just some calls that, you know, you pick up the phone, there's no answer. You know, you hang up, there's you like a back.
There's a 3 second delay while the robot wakes up.
Yeah. Well, like sometimes it's like hangs up on me and I call them back and it says the number's no longer in service.
Yeah, because
so
it's a spoof like number. Phantom. It's not a real number. They use spoofed caller ID. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So I've been getting more and more of those recently. So I was just kind of thinking about it and I'm kind of looking for something like a firewall for my phone calls. So, you know, I only allow certain things to talk to the outside world on my computer. I know there's some like call forwarding services like Google Voice, and I've tried using that, but I'm, you know, the stuff really just hasn't been updated in so long. I'm kind of worried about actually relying on that. Do you know of any good services for just like forwarding calls to a private number?
So I use Google Voice, and it does that. You set up a Google Voice number, start using that as your number instead of your regular number. You can have the Google, and this is a free service, Google Voice can forward to up to 5 phones. That's why I started using it, because I'm always testing different phones. I have 2 phone numbers with AT&T, 2 phone numbers with T-Mobile. I used to have 2 phone numbers with Verizon and 2 phone numbers with Sprint as well. And, I never knew which one I'd be using, so I would have Google Voice. It was very easy for me to say, okay, this is my number. Give that to everybody. That's a Google Voice number. And then have it ring whatever phone I'm carrying right now. I still do that. So that's one advantage. It also has good caller ID capabilities. It even has call rejection capabilities. So you can set up Google Voice to say, if it's, for instance, an unknown caller, just go straight to voicemail. I want to hear it. Or if it's not in my contact list, this is a very useful one, go straight to voicemail. I don't want to hear it. Yeah.
Okay.
That way you'll hear everybody you know will ring through, but no one you don't know will. There's disadvantages. For instance, my doctor, and it drives me crazy, uses call blocking. So it's always an unknown caller when my doctor calls me. That's frustrating, but I call him back. He'll leave a voicemail. You get to choose who you want to hear from. You can have different answering messages for different people. So for my family, I have a nice lovey-dovey message. For friends, I have another one, somewhat less lovey-dovey. Mm-hmm. For strangers, I have a third. It really gives you nice control. So that's free. It's voice.google.com. I don't know how much longer this will continue. I hope it does forever.
I do have Google Voice.
Oh, all right.
I didn't see that feature where it, you can just reject calls that aren't.
Yeah, go into the advanced settings. You can do all sorts of things.
Yeah. Okay.
Now there's another fun thing. This is actually a Kickstarter campaign. It's the Jolly, and we interviewed this guy who's doing this. It's called the Jolly Roger Telephone Company.
Okay.
And I love this. What he's done is he's recorded. He's got a bot answering the phone. So when
waiting to speak with a representative.
I'll play a little recording.
Thank you for your patience.
So he gets a person on, and then the bot.
Hello.
Is his that voice?
Hi.
Hello.
Can I help you?
So the female's a real voice.
Okay.
How can I help you?
And he's a robot voice. That he's recorded. He will keep people on for half an hour, this robot voice. It's not a robot sounding voice, it's his voice. He'll say things like, oh, I'm sorry, I just woke up, I'm a little groggy. Could you repeat, what did you just tell me? He'll drive them crazy. He said the longest anybody's stayed online with it is a half an hour.
Wow.
And so he has a phone number, and so what he does, what he suggests you do is when you get a call that you really want, you don't like this telemarketer, you conference in his phone number and then you shut up and you listen to the fun.
There you go.
He says, I keep talking. I've got a bee on my arm. I can't talk. I'm afraid it'll sting me. Just keep talking. And then so the telemarketer gives him the pitch and then he goes, oh, the bee's gone. I'm sorry. I was so distracted. Could you repeat that? It is hysterical. So if you want to know more about this, I don't know if I should give out his phone number, jollyrogertelephone.com. Completely.
Jolly Roger Telephone.
It's really not a permanent solution.
No.
But it is a lot of fun. And he it's kind of hysterical to listen to. I think he did a Kickstarter campaign because he'd like to make this a more elaborate service than just this. But it's a great idea. So Google Voice. There are other choices that are commercial. There's Grasshopper, Ring Central. All of this exploded with the advent of an open source program called Asterisk that people could put on a Linux box that gave you very sophisticated digital phone handling capabilities. And he uses Asterisk. Jolly Roger uses Asterisk.
Okay.
And what you can do with Jolly Roger or with the Asterisk is really control your phone, you know, tree, in effect. You are using the tools that these professional telemarketers are using against them. Screening, filtering, automatic voicemail, all sorts of stuff.
Okay. Yeah, that service, or at least that tool, is called Asterisk.
Asterisk. Now, that's if you're a real geek. You want to set up an Asterisk server on a Linux box. That can give you – and there's companies that will give you that kind of capability. Anveo, A-N-V-E-O, I think, is another one that you pay for. And then it gives you kind of an amazing, like, tree that you can build of how your phone calls are handled. It's probably based on Asterisk, so you don't have to run the server yourself. So these are really even more sophisticated. But I would take a look, since you have a Google Voice number, I would take a look at the capabilities of Google Voice. Because Google has started doing its own phone company, Google Fi, sometimes it's a little hard to get to Google Voice. The Fi kind of takes it over. But at the very bottom of the Fi page, when I go to voice.google.com, it now says, redirecting you to Fi. But at the very bottom of the Fi page in fine print is a Google Voice page. And you can click that and then go into settings and you have all sorts of call handling capabilities. So that's the easiest. You already got it. You can, play around with that, see if it'll do what you want. Next easiest thing would be to get a service like Ring Central or Grasshopper. Let them answer your phone for you. Those are generally designed for businesses that want to sound bigger than they are, with kind of voice trees and stuff. And then if you're really a geek, Asterisk is amazing. And there are companies that offer Asterisk servers that you can run, or you can have one of your own that's free.
Right on. Yeah, that's what I was thinking, where I would essentially transfer my current phone number, because obviously, or at least evidently, someone has that. And then, like, transfer that into the Google Voice service or see if I could use
that.
The
truth is, you can port your number into Google Voice. The truth really is that they don't need your number. They random call. Now, you're in Georgia. You just had a big primary campaign. So I imagine you got quite a few political calls as well.
In fact, I really didn't. Like, I'm on a lot of the do not call lists. But the biggest issue is I get a lot of, it looks like, now that you mentioned it, looks like spoof numbers.
It is. And that's why do not call doesn't work. If these got, the really nasty ones don't pay any attention to the do not call registry.
Exactly.
And because they're illegal. Because, the law says you can put yourself on the do not call registry. I do. Still get plenty of them. Mm-hmm. When somebody calls, I say, this is a cell phone number. Please put me on your do not call list. Sometimes they do that. They're supposed to. But many of them are out of the country, and they don't care. They're not calling your number. They're calling randomized numbers from spoofed numbers. They can't get caught, so they just keep bugging you. It's really the bane of our existence. But I find Google Voice. I never answer the phone unless I know who it is now. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and all that jazz with you. You can call me up at 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S., or Canada, outside that area. Just use Skype. Love to hear from you. We hear from people all over the world. It's fun. A little bit from now, about half an hour from now, Anthony Tortiello will join us. He's going to be our guest digital photography guru. Talk a little bit about shooting in the water, since that's our assignment from Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. But until then, we should get back to the phones. Henry's on the line from Riverside, California. Hi, Henry. How are you?
Very well. How about you, Leo?
I'm great. Thanks for joining us today.
If I were any better, I'd be twins because I got fertile Leo.
If I were any better, I'd be twins. I don't even know what that means, but I'm sure it's good. So thank you. What can I do for you today?
I want you to help me spend some money.
Okay. That I can do.
I right now have a 27-inch mid-2011 iMac.
Okay. Okay.
And I had a detached retina not too long ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I'm finding that the screen is too big. If I have to look up at something at the top, I get a headache.
Yeah.
I can see. I can still see. It's not that bad. It's just kind of distorted.
They do make a smaller iMac, a 21-inch iMac.
That's what I was thinking of going to.
Yeah.
But I have heard you say that that the processor that's in it makes less difference as to speed than the drive.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Okay. Well, nowadays, processors are so fast. Any iMac you get is going to be awfully fast. I don't think you need to worry about processor speed so much. But you're right that hard drive speed can make a big difference in terms of performance. Now, I would, you know, you have two choices of the 21-inch. You can get a very high-resolution display, and with that you're going to get a very fast i5 processor. But you can also get the lower resolution. It kind of depends. Is your visual acuity still good?
Oh yeah. I'm going to get the 4K. No question.
Yeah, I think it makes it. I love how the 4K looks.
I was just I've always opted for the i7, and I was just wondering if the i5 would be.
Oh, you're not going to notice a difference. The biggest difference between the i5 and the 7 is something called hyper-threading, which means that a single core can do two things, and very few applications take advantage of that. What do you use your computer for?
I use it mostly for work, and we're on a system now where all of our cases and files are stored in the cloud.
Yeah, the speed of the processor is irrelevant. It only makes a difference if you're doing, you know, video editing or maybe photo editing, something that takes a lot of processor power.
I do a little bit of that too. So
yeah, but i5 is fine. I do that on my MacBook, which is a Core M processor, much, much slower processor. The only difference is it's a little bit slower, but you know what? It's not like you go, oh gosh, I better go get a cup of tea slower. It's like that instead of that. You know, it's not bad. And you're right, though, that they give you a choice of a spinning drive, a fusion drive, or the flash storage. Apple is way overcharging now for SSDs. The prices on SSDs have fallen dramatically. You can get a terabyte drive, as you know, and I'd get maybe the higher RAM model, the 16 gig RAM model.
Yeah, I'm going to go for the more RAM.
So 16 gigs RAM, 3.3 quad core i7 is available. And actually, you get that with a more RAM, so why not? You know, it's up to you. I'm sorry, you don't get that with more RAM. All right, so 3.1 gigahertz quad-core i5, plenty fast.
Okay.
A 16 gigs of RAM, that'd make a bigger difference. That's $200. Now we're at $1,699. Unfortunately, to put in a flash drive, you're going to add several hundred dollars, and there's no reason they're charging that much more. It's really kind of outrageous. Maybe take a look at the Fusion drive. My iMac, I'm sitting in front of one right now, a couple of years old, has a Fusion drive in it. That gives me a much larger drive and some of the speed benefits of solid state, because it's a hybrid. It's a one spinning drive plus one solid state drive. And then the operating system moves stuff that needs to be accessed more quickly to the solid state drive.
Mm-hmm.
It watches what you do, kind of, and moves
Does
stuff around.
Be well?
It works well. Yeah, there may be some issues in terms of originally you couldn't run Windows on it because Windows didn't understand it. They fixed that. I haven't had any particular problems with the Fusion drive. So, yeah, at this point, I don't think it's not as – it's faster than a spinning drive, especially the one they put in, which is a 5,400 RPM drive, isn't very fast. So
my current setup is exactly what you have with the 256 gigabyte SSD as a setup, and then a 1 terabyte spinning drive for storage.
That's a nice setup.
Uh-huh.
So you're used to SSD.
I am. I love it.
Yeah, so you're not going to want to go back to the old way. Well, you can use an external drive on an iMac. Are you using external drive right now?
No, I've got the 1 terabyte
inside.
Inside.
Okay.
And I also
because these come with Thunderbolt, you can get an external Thunderbolt data drive that's very fast. Thunderbolt's as close as, you know, as fast as having an internal. So that's probably what I would, you know, if you really want speed, get a 256 gig internal flash drive. That'll cost a couple $100 more. And then have an external, you know, large, you can get a 4 terabyte drive now for like $120 and have that be the external drive.
That's amazing.
I know. That's what I say. Apple's overcharging for their SSD. And that's just because the prices are dropping. And, you know, it takes them a little while to get those. First of all, Apple charges a somewhat of a premium for anything it sells, but they also don't drop the prices as fast as the market does.
Well, I'm an Apple fanboy. So
I am too. And, you know, you don't want to open an iMac and put anything in yourself anyway. So you're going to get it configured as best you can to what you need. I think save money on the i7. The i5, you're not going to notice a difference. Do get an SSD. Do get more RAM.
I'm going to do both of those. Would the same go for a MacBook Air? I need a new one of those too.
Oh, let's see. You're going to be writing a big check. The Airs don't have. I would wait on the Air. I think Apple's going to announce new laptops very soon.
I think they might too. I was going to ask that.
So the iMac, you'd be fine because that's a desktop. You're not going to die if you don't have the latest processor in that. But I do feel like they're going to do Skylake-based MacBooks soon. And I would watch because there may be a new really thin light MacBook. They may give you Retina Airs. There may be some things coming along. So this would be probably a bad time to buy a laptop. If you could put it off, I would put it off.
I can put it off. All of my computers are used in business, so the government gets to pay for part of them.
You never know what Apple's going to do, and in this case, we really don't know when they're going to announce it. It just feels like it's imminent because Skylake has been out now. The mobile part has been out now for a few months. Apple certainly had time to incorporate it. You know, Microsoft's putting it in its mobile devices, so I think it's time. And usually Apple's pretty good on keeping up with the Intel chips. So they've got an event coming up, we're pretty sure, in 2 weeks. They may announce it then. If not, they'll announce it in the next couple of months for sure.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Thanks for the call. Love spending your money. I love Macintosh computers. You've heard me talk before about why most people shouldn't get a multi, you know, a general purpose computer. Most people would be happier with a tablet or a Chromebook, something simpler, more secure. But if you need a computer, and he does because he's doing it for business, a Mac is a really good choice. There, especially now, I think Microsoft's in a little bit of a flux, and Windows 10 has some issues. Microsoft hardware has some issues. I have a Surface Book, still not quite right. I feel like the jury's still out on what's going on over there, up there in Redmond. What's going on over there? 8888 Ask Leo. Actually, game developers are very unhappy with Microsoft. I'll tell you about that when we come back. More of your calls, too. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. The website, don't forget, techguylabs.com. Yeah, I think the Dell XPS 13 is still a good choice. Yeah, they fixed some things on the Surface Book, but then on I was having problems again. It's really frustrating. A different category of problems having to do with the eject mechanism. I'm afraid I can't really recommend the Surface Book. Now, Paul and I have talked about this, and we just don't. Maybe we got a lemon. Maybe we got multiple lemons. I don't know. Hey, let me talk a little bit about our great sponsor. This show brought to you by the folks at Epson. Epson is, Epson, frankly, doesn't have to pay me for ads because I've been using Epson gear my whole computing life, going back to, I think, my first dot matrix printer. The Epson, was it an MX-80 or an FX-80? Back in the early days. But Epson's come a long way. The best inkjets, the best lasers, and now the precision core technology that gives you 40 million drops of ink per second. So you get super crisp black and white text. It prints really fast. My precision core printer, it's an Epson Workforce, does a page every 3 seconds. So it's like 20 pages a minute. I mean, it's like just spits them out. It's incredible. Vivid colors. It does auto two-sided. I use that all the time to save on paper, to save trees.
No warm-up time. It's always ready, and it's wireless. That means I can keep it where I want it, print to it from any device, including my smartphone, my tablet. It just AirPrint Google. I can print to it from here with Google Cloud Print. So I can go on and on. I love this printer. But now, Epson takes it up a notch. And this blows me away. What do people say? They say, I don't like running out of ink in the middle of a print job. I don't want to buy more cartridges. I'd like to just put the ink in the printer and let it, and for, give it enough ink, it'll go 2 years. I don't know if they really said that, but that's what Epson did. That's what Epson did. The new EcoTank printers, they don't have cartridges. They have tanks. We just, Lisa just got the ET4550. It comes with a tank and the bottles, and you load up the tank, and that's going to give you 11,000 black pages or 8,500 color pages. That's about 50 ink cartridges worth of printing, roughly 2 years worth of printing, and it's in the box. And then when it's time for more ink, it's economical and convenient. You get these bottles or packs, and you refill it. It's awesome. We just got the new Epson ET4500. This is a precision core, all-in-one printer. Does all those things I told you, and it feels like it just never runs out of ink. It just prints and prints and prints. All Epson EcoTank printers deliver an unbeatable combination of convenience and value, ultra-low-cost ink replacement bottles or packets, and basically you have the freedom to print without running out of ink. And it looks so good. It really looks good. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank today. Find out more about the EcoTank printers that you will transform the way your home, your office, your work group prints. For the best combination of ease and value, the Epson EcoTank printers, brand new and ready to print when you are. This is Epson saying customers come first. We're going to do what the customers want. Epson, EPSON.com/EcoTank. I think it was a little bit of a scary thing for them. I talked to the Epson guys. They said, yeah, we weren't sure how people would take to it. And then we couldn't keep them in stock. Epson, exceed your vision. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Andrew is on the line from Erie, PA. Hello, Andrew.
Good afternoon, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. What can I do for you?
Well, first off, I'm going to apologize in advance. You may hear Morgan Freeman tell me which highway to take care of.
Are you using Waze?
I am.
I love the Morgan Freeman voice in Waze.
I know, it is great.
TomTom used to have all sorts of celebrity voices, real and impersonated, and I missed that. But Waze has started bringing some of them back. Waze is the free app from Google that tells you, it's kind of crowdsourced traffic conditions. And are you a professional driver, or are you just driving around for the fun of it?
Well, no, I'm not a truck driver, but everything I do is away from home. I do network cell phone testing.
Ah, so you spend a lot of time on the road.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's where Twig comes in.
Waze is a lifesaver for me, at least in areas where it's widely used. Is it widely used in your area?
Well, I'm typically on interstates, so I get a lot of reports.
I noticed, by the way, that Google Maps has integrated Waze. You can't report in Google Maps, but they've integrated the traffic conditions. The other day I was driving and there was an accident ahead. It had just happened. The emergency vehicles hadn't arrived yet. Nobody was hurt, but it was still on the road, and it showed up. My GPS told me about it, and I was kind of surprised. And I guess that's coming from Waze, I would guess.
Well, yeah, since they're all sharing data now.
Yeah, it was a good acquisition on Google's part.
Yeah, absolutely it is. So with everything that's been going on recently and from what I've been hearing on the other shows that are on the network, I'm thinking about implementing or using VPN since I'm always traveling. I'm always on public Wi-Fi.
Yes, you should. I was for a long time, I've been saying, and probably incorrectly, don't worry about it. Anything that you really want to keep private on a public Wi-Fi is probably already encrypted using HTTPS. You see that sometimes in the address. Facebook uses it. Your email most likely uses it.
If it doesn't, don't use that email for sure. But if you're using Gmail, it's HTTPS. Yeah. So a bad guy sitting in a cafe on the same Wi-Fi network can't see that. And so you should be careful. You know, passwords should always be encrypted. If you're buying something, make sure you're on an encrypted page. And but Amazon, most of the places you'd buy would be doing that. But I've read a scary, terrifying article that really galvanized me. Maybe you saw it. It was on Medium, but it came from a Dutch journal in the fall about a bad guy demonstrating what he could do with public Wi-Fi. And it didn't necessarily just involve watching packets float through the air. He could really get into your system and learn a lot about you.
Right.
And so that worried me.
And then the other, what was it, last week, you had someone on Twig. They were on a flight.
Oh, yeah. That was a story.
That's the entire reason why I want to do this now.
This guy, wait a minute, I'm reaching over to get something to show you. Even though it's the radio, I'm going to show you this. Yeah, this guy was on an airplane, and he was he a journalist? I think he was a journalist, and he was writing emails, and the guy behind him was snarfing up his internet. Was it Go-Go Internet? It was one of the airplane internets.
I think so, yeah.
And he was, and the guy behind him tapped him on the shoulder and said, you know, start talking to him about what he was writing.
Yeah.
What? So, yeah I think lately, so we were at a hotel, we took the weekend off a couple of days ago, went up to Mendocino, has open Wi-Fi, and I did not use it. I turned on my tiny hardware firewall, and this is what I would recommend. You can use a VPN. This is even better because what it is, in effect, is a Wi-Fi access point. It will get the internet from the coffee shop or the hotel or the airplane, wherever you're getting the internet, route it through this tiny hardware firewall. That gives you some protection right off the bat. But you could then also turn on a VPN, a virtual private network, and all of your traffic will be routed, encrypted through that public space that is a public Wi-Fi. This makes it very easy to do. You just this thing has a USB power adapter. You just plug it into your computer, or I carry around a little battery, one of those little portable phone batteries with me, and that powers it. And you can turn on VPN. You'll have to, when you first use any access point, you'll set it up by logging into that access point. You know, a lot of access points require that. So you'll set it up by logging into that access point. And then once you've logged in, you can turn on the VPN. And from then on, you're completely safe. It even, this one even supports Tor with the Onion router, which gives you additional privacy. So this costs $91, but you get a year of VPN with it. Or actually, I think the way that these people spin it is, when you buy a year of VPN service from us, we'll send you this hardware for free. It's very simple, easy to use hardware. It can do wired to wired. That's the most secure. It can do Wi-Fi to wired, Wi-Fi to Wi-Fi. So it's very flexible. And I've been very impressed with it. The speed is fairly good. Remember, a VPN does slow you down a little bit. Tor slows you down even a little bit more, but not so much that it's painful.
Right.
I wouldn't recommend it for watching movies, maybe, or well, you know, you probably could, or Skype, but if you want to protect your surfing, your email on an airplane, this might be a good idea. It's tinyhardwarefirewall.com.
Right, and I did see that. I seen the price you were talking about with the VPN thing. That made me wonder about that a little bit more.
Yeah. I've started using it because, and we've talked to others who make something similar. This one is so simple and so easy to use. I don't hesitate recommending it even for somebody who's not particular. I mean, you got to be a little bit sophisticated. That's the sad thing, is that the people who are most at risk are people who will find this most confusing and difficult to use. Sophisticated users are smart enough to understand what the risks are and how to mitigate those risks without using something like this. I just use this from now on. It's very easy. And at $91, that includes a year of VPN. That's a good deal. That's about what a VPN service would cost you without the hardware.
Right. But also, I was actually trying to set up one at home because I have a spare box that I'm using. It's running a small server on. So while I'm away, I could then VPN to my home network.
Well, that's one of the reasons I, when we were at the hotel, you know, I want to be secure, but I want my wife to be secure, my family, the people traveling with us to be secure. So I give them the access point login for the hardware firewall. I can have up to 5 devices using it. So I just had all my phones and the laptops and my wife's devices all are logged onto this. So instead of logging into free hotel Wi-Fi, we all logged into this little box. And they didn't have to do anything. They just, it was automatically secure for them. They didn't even have to know that that's what was going on. Highly recommended. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Anthony!
Aloha, Leo.
Aloha. Oh, I'm so glad you're doing this. This is awesome.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much for the opportunity. Really, really thankful.
Check this and make sure we're doing everything, spelling everything right. And
photography.
I see this missed this typo there. I'll fix that.
Okay.
And Honu are those sea turtles, right?
Yeah, Honu is... turtle for Hawaii. I mean, yeah. Hawaiians. Yeah. Honu is a turtle in Hawaiian.
And you live on Oahu.
Oahu, correct.
Juan.
So the North Shore in a small sugarcane town called Wailua.
Oh, Wailua. Yeah, I know that. How fun. Do you, have you lived there your whole life or when did you move there?
No, originally from Chicago and then been coming to Island for roughly 7 years on and off. I was taking care of my parents on the mainland, so that kind of kept me from being here permanently.
That's right.
But now I saw my mother here.
You told me all this in your email. What am I thinking?
Yeah. So here nice. For good now.
Nice.
I put a few things on the back, too. I have, like, the water housing and figure some little props.
It's very pretty, yeah. It is radio, but you know we got the podcast, so... Visuals are always good as long as we can do it without leaving the radio audience out.
Right, okay.
And somebody's asking, what is that pineapple-looking thing? I think that's a pineapple-looking thing is what that is.
It is a little relief
squishy,
stress.
A squishy pineapple. Let me pull up your, I'm going to pull up your beautiful turtle picture. What is that, a parrot?
Can you hear that?
Yeah, it's all right.
All right.
What is it?
We are in the country, a parrot.
But it's not your personal pet. It's a.
No,
it's
that just... is my personal
oh,
pet.
Oh, it is. Okay. So have you? How long have you been pursuing this as a profession?
Roughly 13 years now.
Nice. And what was it that made you want to do that? Were you an amateur?
You know what? I kind of had a change of career paths and got into photography. I kind of say photography found me, but I was doing commercial photography back in Chicago. And then when I ventured to Hawaii, just kind of fell in love with shooting in the water and the ocean. And it just made sense.
No kidding.
So, yeah, it's been good. It's hard here, though, because everyone is very talented at what they do. So they're very serious and they're very good and there's a lot of beauty and there's a lot of just being in tune with the island that you have to kind of get familiar with. So that's a big part of being a good accomplished photographer on island.
Yep.
Is getting to know where to be when and you become almost a meteorologist. But you need to know the surf, the tides, the winds are a big part of everything here.
I think that's true of to be a pro these days in general is the challenge is really about finding a unique image and a lot of it is patience, knowing where to shoot, pre-viz, prep. The casual photographer doesn't do any of that stuff. So that's how you get an advantage.
Yeah, I mean, even with the iPhones, everyone has iPhones and really good cameras at their disposal, but they don't do things like keep them stable, keep the horizon level. There's certain things like that.
I know, simple things, right? Hold on a sec, we're going to go. Here we go.
Go ahead.
Well, normally Chris Marquardt would be joining us, our photo guy from Germany, but we're going to go to the other part of the world right now. We're going to Oahu. Aloha to Anthony Tortoriello. Hello, Anthony.
Aloha.
Great to see you. He's a regular in the show. We talk every time we talk photography, Anthony's in there and talking along with us, and I'm a big admirer of your photography.
Thank you.
I mentioned
grateful for the opportunity too. So
great to have you.
Want to throw that out there.
And it's timely because Chris left us. He's on vacation for a few weeks with the assignment taking pictures of water. Now I imagine living on Oahu, you have some opportunities to take pictures of water.
Yeah, kind of have to embrace it, surrounded by a big body of water. So yeah, it's a good segue.
And one of your most famous images was one Apple purchased and used in their campaign, shot with iPhone. This amazing picture of a turtle. This is underwater.
It wasn't actually that image, so you know.
Oh.
But it was a similar image.
Similar. Yeah, okay. We're not allowed to show that image. Probably Apple owns that now, right?
Yeah. They you can. I can. You know, I could try to find it for
That's
you.
That's all right. I'll find it.
But it's comparable.
Tell me about one of the things that I think we observed on this whole shot with iPhone campaign. It's an amazing campaign. Amazing photographs. They look every bit as good as a DSLR high-end camera. And it shows that a camera phone is really good. But a lot of it comes from understanding what the camera can do and playing to its strengths, right?
Well, a big part of it is, I always enjoy it because it's taking something that's smaller and maybe less potent. And the bottom line is it's convenient. I mean, it's always with you, so... You know, something like this. This is a housing for the camera. I mean, this thing is...
That's an underwater case?
Yeah, I mean, it has actually a dome port, so you can do over under and get half under the water and above.
Oh, cool.
I mean, it really is, you know, I mean, it just opens up the world of possibilities with this.
So, how much is that? How much is an underwater case for an iPhone?
This is actually a Watershot housing. The brand is Watershot, mm-hmm. but $200, I believe.
That's
and then the
bad.
Dome port is actually an additional... I don't know what they charge. They send me some stuff to kind of use, but really
it's
amazing.
A few hundred bucks.
Yeah, a few hundred dollars. And it gets you up and running, and you're really, it's not a case. It's not, you know, something such as a LifeProof case. It's actually a full-on water housing. So it's proper and legit, and you can do anything with it.
Is that what you used for this underwater picture of a Honu, of a turtle?
Yeah. Honu's Hawaiian, the turtle in Hawaiian, so... But yeah, that's exactly what I use, that setup.
Boy, it's a gorgeous shot. There's the billboard. I'm looking at the billboard.
Yeah, it was neat to see that in big cities, this really beautiful seascape nature image. They recently were endangered, so nice to get some exposure and some spotlight on them.
So give us some tips on shooting water with your camera.
Well, it depends on what you're shooting, but I mean, if you're shooting, say, for example, surf or waves, you want to keep your shutter speed at a high enough shutter. You'd be about a 1,000th of a second, so you'd be at a fast enough shutter to freeze the motion.
That fast?
So, yeah, you don't want to really be anything wave. I mean, if you're in the water shooting waves or surf or anything like that, yeah, you're not going to be under 1,000th of a second.
The good news is it's daylight, so you probably can set your shutter speed that high, but... Even 1/250th is too slow? Like, it'll...
Yeah, you're going to get motion.
No kidding. Yep. So you want to freeze the water.
Yeah, most likely. I mean, unless you're shooting a waterfall or something.
Well, that's the other thing. Sometimes people do time exposures with water. It gives it that nice, soft effect. It probably wouldn't work with an ocean wave, but a waterfall.
No, it's beautiful. I was just on the other, an outer island, the Big Island, and shooting Rainbow Falls, which was a really amazing waterfall. And, about a... second to 10 second exposure gives you a really nice creamy kind of milky various waterfalls going out of focus, just a more artistic look.
I could tell you're in the country. I hear a rooster crowing. I hear birds.
Yeah
that's awesome. Well, hey, we're in Hawaii, we might as well, that's awesome. So interesting. So and for that you'd probably want a tripod, I would guess.
Tripod is good. Yeah, I mean, as I said, certain little things, even with the iPhone, I mean, I have these little things, and it's not, I mean, just like, I know Amanda, I believe, from Joby's been on from you, but this
little
focus.
That's a Joby tripod. They're kind of weird looking. They have articulated legs, but that allows you to wrap them around things, to put them on rocks, and there's not a traditional tripod.
No, and it's very sturdy, and there's a little thing I found for the iPhone. It's called, I'm not plugging, but I'm just something that I really had an issue with, but you can mount your phone. And where I'm going with this is that you can basically
look at that,
get a lot more amazing images by having just some simple little things like stability and something that you can actually place it. So, I mean, you can take advantage of the iPhone 6S Plus 4K video and time lapse and actually get it stable. And
so the Jobys, those are called GorillaPods. The nice advantage of them is they come in a huge variety of sizes and they're fairly inexpensive. They're not as expensive as pro tripods.
So you can, they're roughly $100, what right. I think like the little ball head. So right. you
and who makes that mount you were talking about for the
any case photo? Yeah, I mean, I've seen them. I've had other ones that I've used. And this actually mounts it in three different places. So, I mean, the iPhone 6S Plus, for example, I mean, they're large. They're like a little parachute in the wind. So when you get,
you need a good grip.
When you get, when you get onshore winds and it's really windy by the ocean, which I come into play with a lot of times, this thing is actually, it's perfect.
Any case.
Any case photo.
It's anycasephoto.com. And that's basically an arm that's designed to hold, I guess it could hold any phone. It doesn't look like it's too specific to the iPhone.
They have an iPhone. I know they have a 6, a 6 Plus. I'm not sure what else. They have a little mount.
Oh, dear, they have an iPad mount. Oh, no. Oh, no. People are going to... Now, talk about a parachute.
Maybe an iPad Pro.
Yeah. Wow. So they have an iPad mount for $50. They have an iPhone mount for as little as $30.
But just little things like that. I mean, if you just have stability, I mean, for your video and time lapse. I mean, I can't tell, so many people that I suggest to, work on their time lapses. I mean, their horizons are still not level. I mean, it doesn't take a lot. Just compose correctly and slow down and get a little something that keeps your phone.
I'm bad at that in general because I'll be around. I'll be excited about shooting something and then I'll get the pictures back and everything's tilted to the left because I wasn't paying attention to the simple thing like the horizon. I mean, you can correct it, but...
Yeah, I mean, ideally you don't want to correct it, obviously, especially with video. Video is kind of unforgiving.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, we all do it.
Get it right the first time and you don't have to fix it. All right, one more tip because I know people are going to want to do our photo assignment. Chris left us with an assignment he's going to review in about 3 weeks. Take a picture of water, upload it to the Tech Guy group on Flickr, and he'll pick three images to review. So give us one more tip here.
You know what? Something with Wi-Fi. I mean, a lot of the cameras have Wi-Fi, and they don't know how to use it. It's basically a file transfer. So, I mean, like in Hawaii, for example, when you're shooting stuff, I'd submit a lot of stuff to the news agencies here. You can quickly take a picture, enable Wi-Fi, get the app on your phone, get it to your phone, edit, and be up and running.
It's a great way to get good images on Instagram is to use a better camera and then transfer it to your phone. And isn't that, Instagram was how you were discovered. That picture of a turtle, you posted that on Instagram.
Yeah, apparently they stumbled upon the Instagram and sent an email with a non-disclosure. I thought I was getting spam, so I didn't even know what was going on.
They did it
a few times. Like, wait, I don't know what's going on with my images. I know they're only an iPhone image, but I still don't like sending stuff, into the black abyss, so to speak.
That's nice. Well, if you ever see a I shot with iPhone billboard, and there's a underwater picture of a tortoise or a turtle rather on there. Yeah, you know who did it. Anthony Tortoriello. You can follow him on Instagram and on Twitter at Honu Whisperer. And his website is atortphotography.com.
Yeah,
Anthony,
thank you, Leo.
Great to talk to you. And thanks, aloha, mahalo, and thanks for being in our chat room every week. Okay. Talking photography, one of my favorite subjects. More of your calls coming up. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. See, I told you to go faster than you thought.
Yeah, thanks, Leo.
It whizzes by. Thank you, Anthony. Great job. Great job. You want to do another one next week?
Yeah, sure, of course.
All right, think of a subject, and we'll figure it out. All right, we'll see you next week.
All right, take care.
Thanks,
bye,
Anthony.
Leo.
Bye-bye. Yeah, take care. See you in the chat room. Anthony. That picture of a Honu is amazing. Just beautiful.
Powered by Epson.
Yay, Tort Aloha. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll put a link to Anthony's website. Got some great images on there in the show notes, as well as his Twitter and Instagram handle, so you can see the great pictures from Anthony A. Tortoriello. And he'll be back next week with some more tips for us. Chris Marquardt returns from Tuscany. Lucky guy. In a couple of weeks. My phone number, 8888 Ask Leo. Don is on the line from Mojave Valley, Arizona. Hello, Don. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How you doing, Leo?
I am great. How are you?
I am doing fine. I want you to drop a link in your show notes where I can get the ISO for Windows 10 for Windows 7 or Windows Vista.
I don't know if there's still an ISO online for 7 or Vista. I'm sure there's not.
There's not.
Yeah, and Microsoft puts an ISO for Windows 10. Maybe there's an ISO for 8, but they don't want to go that far back.
No, I mean so you can download it onto Windows.
Oh, I'm sorry. You don't need Windows Vista. You need 10. Yes. You could even just Google Windows 10 ISO, but I'll put it in the show notes for you. And that Microsoft allows you to download. In fact, you can try it free for 30 days. You don't have to register it right away. And once you get it, if you buy a serial number or if you get, you know, many of us get free upgrades from 7 and 8, that'll upgrade and won't cost you anything. They really want everybody to use
Windows 10. What about Vista?
No, sorry. No upgrade for Vista users, just 7 and 8.
Okay, you know, I got a Mac, an iMac that's got a cracked screen. I have a second monitor that is functioning on it, but it's an extended monitor desktop. Can I use a Windows keyboard to do the functions to make it switch to mirroring?
Yeah.
What would the commands be?
Oh, I don't know what the commands are, but you can use a Windows keyboard to do anything you could do with a Mac keyboard. As far as the commands, that's a Windowsy thing. I don't think there is a keyboard command for the Mac. Maybe I'm wrong. The chat room will help me to change mirroring on the Mac. That's the kind of thing you have on a function key on a Windows keyboard because of Windows. I'll have to look and see if Apple's not typically does not have as many keystroke combos as Windows does. In fact, Microsoft, from the very earliest days of Windows, made sure that you could use Windows without a mouse. And it's, to this day, still the case. Using tab and arrow keys and so forth, you can get anywhere, any button, any menu item, and do it without having a mouse. Not the case on Macintosh. If your mouse dies on Macintosh, yikes. you're gonna have to get a new one. Apple has, the Mac was designed to work with a mouse from day one. That's probably part of the, reason for that is every Mac always came with a mouse. Not every Windows machine always had a mouse. So I don't know of a keystroke that will allow you to tell the Mac to mirror or extend to the second screen. I think you have to do that from the system preference pane using a mouse. Pretty sure you do. All right, on we go with Steve in Rancho Mirage. Hi, Steve. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I want to tell you that I've been with HostGator, was with HostGator for 9 years. Very happy. $9.95 a month. Do the chat. Always got my answers. So on. So I'm a happy, happy customer with them. However, they associated with a company called SiteLock, and SiteLock scans for malware and finds malware and supposedly fixes malware. And my site somehow got malware, just like that lady who had called in earlier mentioned. There is something on there that says malware. And they did me the favor of reporting me 5 times in a single day to HostGator. HostGator then notified me that I had malware. And because of that, they were going to take down my site. Again, it had been up there for 9 years. And when I called them, I automatically got transferred to SiteLock. And SiteLock immediately presented me with a plan of cleaning up my site for $300.
Yikes.
Or taking a monthly service at an outrageous $97 a month.
Right.
So I called back HostGator and said, no, just let me go back into my cPanel and clean it up. Well, that turned out not to be an option. And I had to go to SiteLock, who by that time had reported me another 5 times, and they took my website down.
Yeah.
So finally, I had to go back through their team and all of that, get permission. I went in, I cleaned up my site, everything's fine. Before I know it, SiteLock is again doing me the favor of reporting malware. And this has happened to several of my friends. In fact, there's a site up that you or your listeners...
Well, let me interrupt you first. I understand it's upsetting to you. They're doing the right thing. If there's malware on your website, you are potentially infecting people, everybody who visits your site. This is a very serious issue. It's happened to me. It's happened to our website, our podcast website. Google reported it, The way Google lets you know is when you go, when people go to search for your site and try to go to it, Google will say, no, you can't go to this site. It has malware on it. That's the right thing to do. I mean, I wasn't thrilled about it, but that's the right thing to do because every person who goes to your site after that point can get infected with malware. The reason I think I understand why your hosting company was reluctant to let you clean it up, it's hard to do. And so they've contracted with a company that specializes in this, admittedly at great cost to you. But this is, you know, it's web, having a website, a public website, is a, you have a responsibility. And so they went to this company and they said, this company is going to be responsible for it. We, you know, they're probably bonded. They probably have insurance. There's a liability that your website host is incurring, as are you. You're incurring a liability as well if you have a site with malware on it. If you said, I cleaned it up, and now SiteLock comes along and says, no, he didn't, you probably didn't. This stuff is malicious stuff is hard to get out. And it takes more than just, you know, you gotta know what you're doing. So I understand why HostGator says you got to use SiteLock. I understand why SiteLock took you offline. All of that's the right thing to do. I know it's painful for you, but that's to protect everybody who uses your site, and you need to do that. I'd follow the instructions and continue on, and if it costs you $300, so be it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace, your place to make your next website. If you've been suffering, as I was for years, I've been doing these ads for years. I'm going to go to Squarespace. I made my Squarespace site in minutes. I love it. That's all I'm ever going to use from now on, squarespace.com. So what happens? You go to Squarespace. In fact, you can try it for free right now. Click the Get Started button. You're going to pick a template. Choose from a website or online store, although there's e-commerce in both. But if you know, the templates are gorgeous, really gorgeous. But they're just a starting point. They're a hell of a starting point. I mean, these are the best designers, the best engineers making an incredible site. Look, every site's different, though. That's what I love about it. These are all sites using this template. What is this? The Fort template. And everyone looks different. They're all, though, mobile responsive. That means they look good on an iPhone, on a 70-inch screen, and everything in between. So you don't have a separate mobile site. You just have your site. They all have commerce built in, which means this is what I – if you're selling online, Squarespace is the only company I know where the commerce is just integrated in. So it's not like a little bag hanging off the side of your website. You go to the shopping cart. No, it's all in there. So if you're a musician and you sell music online, if you sell your crafts online, whatever you're up to, Squarespace has a site ready for you. Start your free trial right now at squarespace.com. The only thing I mention is if you use the offer code TECHGUY when you buy, you'll save 10% and they'll love us even more. Frankly, we've been with Squarespace since the very, very beginning. And we helped put them on the map. They helped put us on the map, and it's a relationship we love. And I just love my Squarespace. Let me show you my site. If you go to leoville.com. By the way, I can say that without hesitation. You could all go there at once. And it would not affect the responsiveness. Every Squarespace site is fast. This is the cover page. So I used it, the cover page feature just to, you know, put up who I am. And this is my design. Don't blame Squarespace for how it looks. This is what I did. But see, that's the point. It looks like what you want it to look like. I put the slideshow in there. And then I said, well, I ought to put my blog in there. So I put a blog in there, too. Then I said, well, you know, I like to take pictures, so I'm going to put my photos in there, too. And I got an event calendar. You could do all of it. It was so easy. And by the way, I brought all the blog posts I've ever made going back to 2001, automatically imported them all right in there. Squarespace. I just love it. Look at these. These are every post of it. This is my everything from my blog has ever been there. The about page. I got to dress this up. I got to make it look a little bit better. But, you know, that's Squarespace makes it easy. Squarespace.com. Use the offer code TECHGUY. 10% off. You'll show your support for the show. Squarespace. You should. Well, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, and yes, Macintosh command keys. I was wrong, and I apologize. The chat room has informed me that there is a command for mirroring the screen or extending the screen in Macintosh. Command, what was it? Command F1? Wow, who knew? Command F1. So if you're on a Windows keyboard, that's where it gets a little dicey because there is no command key on a Windows keyboard. But generally, when Windows keyboards, the command key and Windows key are the same key. So the Windows key will map. If you plug a Windows keyboard into a Macintosh, the Windows key, the key with the Windows logo on it, will map to the command key on a Macintosh. So Windows key F1 using a Windows keyboard on a Macintosh. I apologize. There is a command. I did not know. There you go. How about that? How about them apples? Back to the phones we go. See the chat room. It's very handy. And by the way, everything we talk about is in the website, techguylabs.com, including a link to the chat room and information about how to get in the chat room. They're kind of, there's like, you know, 500, 600, 700 people in there. And they're kind of like my research team. They're there and they're anxious to help people out. So you're not just calling me. You're calling a lot of experts who are always there ready to help. Anne is on the line from Oceanside, California. Hello, Anne.
Oh, hi. I enjoy the music you play on Wait. Great. All that horn section and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't hear that music much anymore. I had a question. I have an Acer laptop. I got it about 10 months ago, and then I sent it back to the company to replace the hard disk. And since I've gotten it back, I'm getting a pop-up to activate Windows, and I usually just exit out. I think I told you it's 8.1 I have. And then simultaneously, I guess I haven't been getting any updates. I wasn't aware of it.
Yeah, so you have to activate Windows.
I didn't know that, and I've been going on the internet, and I'm worried now. I probably have tons of viruses.
No.
I was unprotected.
You're okay. You're protected up to the date of that installation. Just stuff that's come out since then.
And then it asked me for a key, and I don't have the key. I mean, when I bought it, none of this came up originally.
Did you have Acer do the fix?
Acer did the fix. I called them and I said, I've got this pop-up, and they go, well, don't worry about it. You know, and they said, do you see, I told them I had 8.1, that's what I wanted to keep. And they said, well, do you see it on there? And if you look into the right-hand bottom corner, you can see it. It says 8.1, I forgot what exactly.
Well, so this is the deal. Microsoft, this is anti-piracy measure that Microsoft takes. Microsoft requires that you activate a copy of Windows. And after 30 days, it's going to get worse. It's going to start annoying you more and more. And at a certain point, it'll just not work. It'll barely work.
Well, how do I get the key if I don't? It said something about the key would be on a box. Well, I sent the box, the computer, when they did the up. When they replaced the hard disk, I sent it back to them in the box. They didn't send
it. It's a little annoying because if you had Acer do the fix, they should have activated it. So it is. Okay. So, when they replaced the hard drive, they reinstalled Windows.
Yeah, I told them I didn't want them putting 10 on because I knew how to use 8.1. I didn't want to change anything. Yeah. And like I said, now I'm seeing this activate Windows.
Is it a laptop or a desktop?
It's a laptop.
Look underneath the laptop. There should be a sticker or a badge that has the key on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, usually there is.
Oh, okay. There's one that has the. I don't know what the number. I don't know what they call it.
It's a long number.
Okay.
It's the Windows key is I can't remember, 6 or maybe 8 groups of 4 letters and numbers.
Okay.
Separated by dashes.
Okay.
So it'll be on it somewhere there, and that's what you need to do. You need to activate it and enter that key. They should have done that. I'm surprised they didn't, but. Because you had the factory fix it, you're fine. I mean, you have a legitimate copy of Windows.
I do, but I'm worried now that I've been using it without any updates. I have it set for automatic update, but then I was wondering why aren't I getting any? I kept looking and seeing that there hadn't been any for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
It has to be updates.
Yeah, and you will need to update. It's, by the way, it's 78 characters, so is that right? No, it's not 78 characters. It's 10 groups of 4 characters, letters and numbers.
Okay.
And so you'll see that. That should be on that sticker. There may be another number on there that is the factory key, or you know, the the service key, product service key. But there should be a serial number on the bottom of that, and that's what you need to enter.
Oh, is that the same as a serial number?
It's not the same as a serial number.
Okay, because I know where the serial number is. But
it usually is next to that.
Okay, I'll look for that. Yeah. And then in the meantime, though, you don't think I probably, because I've been going without any updates, that I've been all over the Internet. I'm just worried that I've gotten some kind
of
picked up.
You're almost certainly fine. But what you'll do as soon as you enter the product key is go into Windows Update and run as many updates as you can until it says there's no more updates. And that'll protect you. It doesn't, just because you don't have the updates doesn't mean you're going to get bit. Remember the last caller from the last hour, the guy who hadn't updated his website? If you had gone to his website and you hadn't updated Windows, you might have gotten bit. And that's why it's so important that when websites get malware on them, they get fixed, because that's how malware spreads. Bad guys buy these kits, and you can buy them online for $50 to $100, that they then put on websites. They go around, they look for websites that have flaws themselves, put these kits on the websites, and when you visit as an unpatched user, the kits run in behind the scenes, invisibly, and look for vulnerabilities in your system. Now, if you've patched, you don't have any.
Now, how do you know if you come across one of those?
You'll be all right. You would have seen something happen. But just to make sure, there's a couple of things you can do. Windows has a built-in malicious software removal tool on it. Mm-hmm. It's called MSRT. The way you run it is you hit Windows key R, and you type MRT in the box that opens up and hit return. Windows key R opens a command line. And then you type MRT, return, and you'll get a box that's called the malicious software removal tool. And you just run a thorough scan. Chances are, if that comes up clean, you're fine. I'm sure you're fine. You would know.
Is this going to be in your notes?
I'll put this in the show notes on TechGuyLabs.com.
Thank you very much, Leo. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. So I believe there will be a product key sticker somewhere on probably the bottom of your Acer. I'm not sure where Acer puts it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what you need to... somebody now says it's 25 characters. I'm not sure. It's a set of characters separated by dashes.
Alrighty.
You'll know. It's not a serial number. It's very clearly a Windows key. Enter that in, and Windows will churn for a little bit, say, activated, and you do need to do that. Otherwise, it'll stop working fully soon.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks.
You're welcome. Appreciate the call. And, yeah, I understand your concern. I don't blame you for being concerned. And this is partly my fault. We talk so much about malware that I think people have this impression, understandably, that it's just waiting to jump on you. It is and it isn't. You can surf fine without having an update for a while. And if you run this malicious software removal tool, again, Windows key R, that's the run command. Windows key R, type MRT. I don't know why it's not MSRT, but it's MRT. Hit return, and then run the thorough scan or full scan, and it comes up clean. You're all right. You're all right. That's sufficient. Gary in Downey, California is coming up next. Gary wants a good 70-inch flat panel TV. I'll have to ask Scott Wilkinson for some advice on that. We'll also be talking to John in Seal Beach. He's got a new Windows 8 computer without a serial number. What does he do next? We'll talk about that, too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. She doesn't have a key. Bellark Advisor would show if it were activated. Unless the key's built into ROM. I guess it actually probably is built into ROM, huh? I don't know. I don't know. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Let's see who's next here. Gary in Downey, California. Hi, Gary.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm good. You want a big TV, 70-incher?
Well, that's what I'm hoping for.
And your budget, you said, is $1,200?
That's what I've seen on the Internet in my research.
Well, I think if there's a $1,200 TV that's 70 inches, it's going to be a Vizio. I'm looking on the Vizio site. I see the M Series 70 for $1,899, but you shop around, you might be able to find it for a better price. That's a good TV.
What do you think of the E Series?
Yeah, that's E70. That one is $1,200 exactly, yeah. Out of stock on Vizio.com, but if you see it for sale, that's a great TV. I bought that for my daughter, not that size, but that's, I think, a variant that has good smart TV functions. Vizio really has managed to corner the market on inexpensive but decent TVs. I'm not saying great, but for $1,200 for a 70-inch, that's a great price.
What is your opinion about refurbished and the, 4K versus the 1080p?
I don't think there's a compelling reason to get 4K today because there's very little 4K content. And even when that comes out, 1080p is going to be fine. A lot of people are saying, in fact, yesterday our home theater guru pointed out, you can get 4K on Netflix now and on Vudu and on some Google streams. But the problem is those are streaming from the internet, which means they're going to be heavily compressed, which means they're not going to look fantastic. If you want to see a great-looking 4K picture, you're going to have to buy a 4K Blu-ray player. That's another $400. You're not going to, and there's going to be four movies available. So I wouldn't worry about 4K. I would stick with 1080p. That'll save you some money. I think Vizio is a very good brand. The problem is almost all the new TVs are 4K. So you're going to be getting, as you say, either a refurb or a demo unit or one that's just been on the shelf and didn't sell. It's going to be last year's model. But if you can find that, go ahead. Now, refurb depends who did the refurb. If you're getting it from the Vizio factory, I think that's fine because they're going to make the warranty the same. They're going to stand by it. If you're getting it from the TV guy down the street, it depends. I don't know how well he's going to refurb it. Maybe he cleaned the screen.
Well, the refurb was coming from a major retailer, Fry's.
Fry's, I have mixed feelings about their refurbs. I've heard stories that they've sold refurbed hard drives. That's not a good buy. Now, a refurbed TV, chances are that was a demo unit, or maybe it was a unit somebody bought and returned. Let the buyer beware. But if look at it carefully and it looks like it's okay, might have some cosmetic damage. These things are not repairable. They really aren't. They're solid state circuitry. It's not like the guy comes out and puts in a new tube. So if it works fine and you look carefully at it and make sure all the pixels are working, there's no lines across the screen. Stuck pixels are a problem. Make sure you look at it with a black picture or a dark picture. Make sure that there isn't a stuck white pixel and vice versa, that when you're looking at a bright picture, you don't see black dots. There are normally maybe a few pixels that aren't working, but it can be very annoying if you have a clump of stuck pixels. So those are the kinds of things to look for. Fry's refurbishing it, what does that mean? Fry's can't, they're not going to take a circuit board out and put a new one in. Make sure it's warrantied. You know, you're trying to get a good deal. And so that may be, you know, the chance you take on a good deal. But nothing wrong with Vizio. I think they make a great brand, a great product. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. John is on the line from Seal Beach. Hi, John.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call, and I enjoy your program.
Well, thank you for listening. I appreciate it.
I have a Windows 8 computer.
Yep.
And I updated it. Okay, so I made sure all the updates were there, and I was wanting to upgrade it to Windows 10. Now, some items that came along was the computer did not have that external paste-on thing that shows the numbers.
Right.
So I looked into the battery case, and it's not there.
You don't need the numbers. You shouldn't need the numbers. So when it was a Windows 8 computer, it had already been activated, right? It was authorized. Yeah.
It was working. But
when you take the free Windows 10 upgrade, this was the free upgrade, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, when you take that, in the process of installing, it checks to see, and if the previous computer was authorized, your Windows 10S installation will be authorized without any, you don't need to enter serial numbers or anything, any effort on your part. And furthermore, you can now install Windows 10 again and again, and you'll never have to do it again because Microsoft, they're doing something called an entitlement. They're saying that computer, that physical hardware is entitled to Windows 10. Done. Now, he has it activated?
Well, this is really a techie twist in the program. I then called, and I don't want to be a bad reflection on any of the companies I may mention. I like them all, you know. But I called Dell, and I spent 3 hours with them. And they finally went into my computer, and they got 9 groups of numbers that were kind of like, they said the numbers are now etched into the motherboard.
As they always were. So my question is, did it not activate when you upgraded to Windows 10?
No, it didn't.
That's not how it works. I would try reinstalling Windows 10. You should be authorized. I don't know why they spent 3 hours with you. It's much more straightforward. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. There's no serial number. There's no Windows code. Hold on a second. Sorry, I had to break for a commercial there. So here's the thing. Okay.
The thing is, I called. I took those numbers and I called Microsoft per what Dell told me to do. So I called them and I gave them all of these numbers. And then Microsoft says that 8 groups or 9 groups of numbers was not valid. So then now I'm in the middle. I'm going back.
Yeah, but you don't need to do any of this. All of this is crazy. Stop. It doesn't work that way anymore. When you do the...
Be very suspicious if there's no logo on the outside, that 25-digit code that you're talking about.
No,
he's very wary.
Okay.
Probably right. I hear what you're saying.
What I'm saying is, did you have an activated Windows 8 on that computer?
Yes. Yes, it was running Windows 8.
And you looked and it said it was activated. And then it said, would you like Windows 10, right?
Yes.
So you got the invitation to upgrade?
Yes.
Okay. And then you just said, yes, okay, upgrade, and it did it.
It got to the point where it says, okay, enter that 25-digit number.
Then that's not it. The free Windows 10 upgrade will at no point ask you for a number.
Well, this is kind of a little monkey wrench, I think, and I'm just baffled by it. I've never seen.
Okay,
I have upgraded other machines to 10.
Yeah. So
I never had this.
Yeah, you never got asked for a number, did you?
No. But this one
I did. Roll back. So there should be a rollback to Windows 8 the way it was. Make sure that Windows 8 is you got it from Dell, the computer from Dell?
Yes, it's a Dell.
Okay. You want to make sure that that was a Windows 8 machine that was, make sure it's Windows 8.1, by the way. You have to have it upgraded.
Okay, I did the updates to it.
Good.
You know, I did the updates to make sure.
So Windows 10 never asks for a number unless you're buying Windows 10, unless you're doing it not the free upgrade, but you're buying Windows 10. You don't want to do that.
Yeah.
So what you want to do is roll back the Dell to the way it was.
Okay.
That's in the recovery options. You have 30 days to roll it back to Windows 8.1.
Yes.
Do that. Check to make sure that Windows 8 is activated. It must be activated. And if it's activated, you'll never get asked for a CD key.
But I've been using this computer.
Yeah, so it probably was activated.
Yeah, I don't think I could use it unless it was. But this is kind of a quirky thing, I think. And it sounds like Dell is... It sounded like it was new to burn these numbers in.
Yeah, whoever you were talking to at Dell was kind of half smart.
Yes.
So here's the deal. Here's how this works. Yes, that's correct. The motherboard has an identifier, which you don't ever need. Whatever number he gave you is irrelevant. You don't need that. It's not user. There's no user serviceable part. But there is a unique identifier in BIOS, and that on the hardware. And that identifier is associated to that machine and that license. And that's why Windows 10 doesn't ask for a CD key. It merely says, oh, this was activated for Windows 8.1. It's approved for Windows 10. Install Windows 10. And at this point, you can erase the hard drive and reinstall Windows 10 from the downloadable ISO on the Microsoft site. It will never ask you for a key. So the fact that it's asking for a key tells me you didn't do it. There's something, you didn't get it from the right place or something. So yeah, it okay. shouldn't ask you for a key. What you want to do is roll back to 8.1. Wait for the invitation to upgrade. Follow that process. It should never ask you for a key. It should just be activated automatically. I know I've done this with the Dell computers. This is how it does it now. And I don't know why it asks you for a key. That's not right, and the Dell guy wasn't very helpful, frankly. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. There is a lot of confusion because Microsoft has really changed the way it licenses Windows now, especially if you did the free upgrade to Windows 10 on a Windows 7 or 8.1 machine. If you go to the store, online or in person, and you buy a new copy of Windows 10, you will get a license key with that, and you will need to use that to install that version of Windows 10. But that's a really small subset of people who are using Windows 10. If you have a Windows 7 or an 8.1 machine, if you have an 8.0 machine, you need to upgrade it to 8.1. But when you have a Windows 7 or 8.1 machine, you can upgrade to Windows 10 for free, and it will never ask you for a license key. It doesn't, because it just associates that license. They call it an entitlement with that hardware. That's a, you know, I think it's a better way of doing it because the user doesn't have to think about it. It's just a, you know, that machine is always going to be able to upgrade. You don't need a license key. The disadvantage is you can't install that copy of Windows 10 on any other machine. You don't own a copy of Windows 10. That machine owns Windows 10. And that's a little bit of a different, that's why it's called an entitled, that machine is entitled to Windows 10. That machine is, not you. So it's a different way of thinking of things. You don't actually own it, the machine owns it. 8888 Ask Leo. James is on the line from Austin, Texas. Hello, James.
Hi, Leo. First time, long time.
Thank you.
I love your podcast. I'm interested in getting a used Mac Mini or whatever because I want to learn Apple and stuff like that. I've been a PC guy for, you know, well over 20 years, and I want to get into the Apple world and maybe, I don't know, develop a Mac, you know, an iPhone app or something.
Oh, cool. Yeah. A Mac Mini is a good choice. That's, in fact, exactly how Apple positioned them when they first came out. You're a PC owner. You don't have to do anything. Just buy a little Mac Mini, put it on top of your PC, plug your keyboard, your mouse, and your monitor into the Mac Mini. Boom, you got a Mac.
Yeah, I was thinking about getting a used one. Is there something I should look at when I'm looking on Craigslist and all those other places as far as what to stay away from? Like the certain, because I get confused as far as, you know, the models are listed just by years or whatever.
Yeah, and if you can look it up, there's a number of websites like Every Mac that you can look up what particular processor and RAM and configurations were available in that year. Yeah, Apple just says, you know, mid-2012 Mac Mini or whatever. That's how they designate all of their machines, is by the date, effectively. I would say don't go too far back in time. 2012's fine. I wouldn't go much farther back than that. Mostly because you want to be able to put the newer operating systems on there, especially if you're doing development. You're going to want to use El Capitan. So need to make sure that machine can support El Capitan. It's hard to say El Capitan without saying it, like, you know, El Capitan.
Exactly.
You got to do the Ricardo Montalban version of it. But I think, yeah, and, you know, for what you're talking about, I think it's not bad to buy a used one. You may find that there's, you know, flaws in the hard drive. It's worn out or something. It's not easy, but you can open a Mac Mini. You need putty knives to do it. But you can open it and you can replace stuff. I'm normally not bullish on buying used computer equipment because you're buying whatever problems that person had with it. But in this case, if you want to just kind of try Apple development without spending a lot of money, this is probably a good way to do it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. And Mike B. in our chat room says he's using his 2010 Mac Mini with El Capitan and no problem. Yeah, I think most Macs in the last 5 years can get to the latest operating system. I just think for you want relatively contemporary just because you want the latest processors. You want enough RAM. I'd say 4 gigs is kind of the minimum. You'd like 8. You want a big enough hard drive, fast enough hard drive. The Minis tended to have very slow hard drives. And one thing you may notice is connectors changed. They didn't have Thunderbolt on the Minis for a long time. So, and having Thunderbolt's nice for attaching external drives and so forth. We're going to talk to James in Austin in just a second. That was James. Sorry. We're going to talk to Ed in San Diego in just a second. Another Windows 10 upgrade issue. Holy cow. That's our third today. What's going on up at Microsoft land? What is going on? You know, when Windows 10 first came out, the activation server was swamped. And activations took a long time. Took me more than a week. But that shouldn't be a problem today, still. I wouldn't think so. Ed in San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your Windows 10's not backing up either?
Hello, Leo.
Hey, what's going on?
Well, you know, I bought about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I bought a laptop from Dell. It's a Mobile Precision.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, maybe last year I started getting the annoying messages to upgrade to 10.
Yeah.
And sometime I resisted, and I eventually relented.
Yeah.
The problem I'm having is that I get past the first login. So, you know, when it...
Yeah, it wants your Microsoft account login.
No, it doesn't. You're saying that might be the problem I'm having?
Well, it's certainly what it wants.
Well, okay, when I get the first login prompt after it is finished,
it's not the same. Yeah.
I get that initial login after it's gone from 7 to 10.
Yeah.
I'm able to log in with the
computer. The computer's logged in.
Windows 7.
Right.
And then the next boot, the next time I reboot, it presents the login screen again, but then it doesn't wait. It just crashes. It crashes to a light blue screen, which flickers.
That's a bad install. So just do it over.
Okay.
That's not normal. Oh. But I should tell you that one of the things that really changed between 7 and 8 and 7 and 10 is that they now want you to use your Microsoft account as your login. And there's good reason to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It'll save all your connections. It'll automatically set up a bunch of things. You can say, and I do this, you could say, all right, fine, I'll give you that, but I want to use my old login as my login. I don't want to have to enter my, because I have a long Microsoft account password. I don't want to have to enter that every time.
Right.
So it will let you have a different login, but you do want to give it your Microsoft account information at first. You cannot do that.
Mm-hmm.
There's extra steps, and they kind of make it hard because they really want you to use your Microsoft account.
Okay. I'd love to have Windows 10 running because I notice it speeds up my computer.
You're going
to
love it.
Yeah, and but I just can't. I have tried about 10 times.
And that's just a
Dell,
that's a
Microsoft.
Yeah, that's a bad install. You know what I would do? We'll put the link in the show notes. Microsoft offers the installer as a separate downloadable ISO. Get that and do the upgrade. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, you can use local accounts. There's no problem if you're paranoid or whatever. But it's a lot easier if just use the local account and then set up a regular login. Because I'm not going to type that long password every time. I don't even think it's a good idea. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. Back to the phones we go. And Jim is in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Jim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, hi, Leo. Thank you very much. I always learn something listening to you. And your show was preempted here because of some sports thing, and I'm listening to you online. But
darn that sports stuff. Darn it.
Well,
I'm glad we're online. That's good. I'm glad you could keep listening.
We can bypass that. I have two quick questions, please. One is a friend of mine once gave me a command to use for saving your file, you know, transferring your file, say, to a thumb drive, which I can enter in Windows.
Yeah.
Do you know what that would be? I'm just saving that for, you know, for a future time when I may go to a different platform, meaning operating system, and I still have the programs in. I can plug in my thumb drive and bring them down. And it's also a way of just saving my files.
Well, of course, you can do drag and drop file copy. All of your data is stored in a folder called Documents and Settings. Each login is in there. You could just drag that whole folder over. There are better ways to do copying on Windows. They fixed this in Windows 10, but in older versions of Windows, we often recommended that you use a copy command that is not well documented, called RoboCopy, of all things. And that's a command line copy utility that is really, really handy. So in order to do that, you'd have to open a command line and then type RoboCopy. In fact, I would start by typing RoboCopy-help and get the help information, because there's a number of command parameters. The reason Microsoft put RoboCopy on Windows, let me just see if it's still on Windows 10. Robo does not stand for robot. It stands for robust. The reason was the copy program on Windows was so awful, so unreliable, so broken, that they had a kind of a hidden, lesser-known command for people who knew what they were doing. I don't know if that's the one your friend told you about, but that's a good one to know about. Since Windows 8, I think they've fixed the copy command. But RoboCopy does live on.
So, good to know. And the second question is this. I'm almost dreading the time where they will force me to go from my Windows 7 to 10, because I understood from listening to you previously that Windows 10 does not carry the media player, and the media player is everything to me.
No, it does carry the media player. This is a common confusion. It's Windows Media Center that's gone.
Oh, okay.
That's the lean back experience. You know, you'd run that and the whole screen would go whoosh and all the text would be big. It was designed for using on a TV. They said nobody uses this, so they stopped updating in 2009 and they killed it. Windows Media Player is absolutely still there.
Meaning I can listen to stations around the world?
All that's the same.
Okay, wonderful. Listen, thank you very much and have a wonderful spring.
It's great
to talk
to you. As
always, you're helpful.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. I really appreciate it. Yeah, dragging the whole folder on earlier versions of Windows before 8 was not reliable. If a file copy failed, it would fail silently. It would get you could get damaged stuff. It just wasn't good. So we always told people use RoboCopy, and again, it's RoboCopy. It's on all versions of Windows. You need to open a command line, so you hit Windows key R. That's the run command, and type CMD. That opens a command line. It's like a DOS shell. It's like DOS. This is a DOS command. And then if you just type RoboCopy without anything, it'll show you the basic stuff. If you type RoboCopy /?, say, I don't know what this is. What do you do? It'll give you a long list, pages of commands. But the fundamental command is, you know, copy this directory to my thumb drive. And it will do it in a more robust fashion. In other words, it'll verify the file after copy. It might be a little bit slower, but it's just more reliable. Even better than that, of course, is getting a utility. Your friend might have told you about the free Windows Sync utility. In fact, I bet you that's what they told you about. And the point of that was that not that you'd run it only once, but that you'd run it all the time to keep the thumb drive synchronized with the desktop. And I don't know if I still recommend this. What was the name of it? Was it WinSync or I can't remember the name of it? SyncMaster. It was a free utility that Microsoft offered. There are better utilities. In fact, the one I recommend is from a company called Centered Systems. It's called Second Copy. It's not free, but it's a very good synchronization tool. So that's a better backup solution because it keeps stuff in synchronization. And you can run it on a schedule, and it will periodically run and check and see if the USB key has the same files as on the hard drive, and if it doesn't, copy the new files over. It's not, you know, the ultimate backup tool, but it's certainly a useful tool. There's another one called TerraCopy from CodeSector.com that is a power tool for copying.
So there are a lot of good SyncToy. That's it. Thank you. That's the free Microsoft app that is kind of a simple synchronization program. That might be the one your friend told you about. That's free. If you just Google Sync, SyncToy, it's aptly named. It's kind of a toy. TerraCopy is a powerful, fast copy program that is a commercial product from a third party, but a very good one. So there are a lot of choices out there for copying. Moving on to Azanis from Italy. Buongiorno. Come stai?
I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, good. He speaks English. Hi, Azanis. What's up?
I'm eating my second pasta, and I don't want this to be stereotypical, but it's delicious. And I came up with a question.
Okay.
So I stumbled upon these cases that you can attach some small lenses to them.
Yes.
And you basically upgrade your camera, your phone.
Yeah, yeah. It depends on the camera you have. Most of these are for the iPhone. And there are quite a few of them. What kind of phone do you have?
I have an S6, but that's not actually the question.
Okay.
Is there a case that allows you to connect an actual lens from a DSLR?
Ah!
Yeah.
That is an interesting question. So you want a DSLR mount for your iPhone?
For the S6.
Yeah. Or for the S6, for the Samsung Galaxy S6. Well, if anybody sells it, it would be Photo Jojo.
Okay.
PHOTOJOJO. They sell great camera accessories, all kinds, for cameras and camera phones. They have the Iris series for iPhones. The problem is it's a Galaxy, and you know almost all this stuff is developed for an iPhone. They have a magnetic lens series. I don't see a DSLR lens adapter, but if anybody had it, it would be Photo Jojo. Their stuff is kind of amazing, and I love that. I love the site. Let me keep looking, and I'll tell you what. We're running out of time here in the States, but I will see if we can find something and put it on the website, and that's always a great recommendation for everybody. If you listen to the show, the website has all the links, everything I mentioned, and a lot more. And it's free. I'm not pitching you on anything. There's no sign up. I don't want your email address. Just keep in mind techguylabs.com. It'll have audio and video of the show after the fact, but it'll also have picks, recommendations. And if we can find something as honest, we'll find something for you and put it up there. Techguylabs.com. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.